This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good morning. Welcome to July, everybody. This is Phillies Therapy. My name is Paul Boyer, joined as always by The Athletic's Matt Gelb, on the heels of a dicey-looking four-game split at home with the Miami Marlins. Your Philadelphia Phillies enter this very first week in the year's seventh month with a 55-29 record. They are still 8 games clear in the lead in the National League East. That is the largest division lead in baseball. They're coming up, though, on a very interesting week and a half. Road trip starts tomorrow. That's Tuesday with 3 at Wrigley against the Cubs, followed by those Atlanta Braves we all know and love for the first time since the very beginning of the season. 3 out in Atlanta, Fulton County, before coming back home for 3 against the Los Angeles Dodgers. And they will do all of that and partake in these games, these marquee matchups, without some more of their best players. JT Realmuto is already on the shelf, of course, as you all know. But entering the weekend, Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber in the same game, basically the same inning, suffer leg injury scares. But thankfully, much like we dodged a bullet with Ranger Suarez taking a comebacker off his hand earlier, it does not seem like they will each miss much time, which is incredible and as much good news as you can take from this. So with that setup and introduction, let's bring in Matt. Matt, hello. Happy July.
Happy July, Paul. It's going to be an interesting week. It's probably not going to be pretty.
No.
But I think that's the context needed for watching these games right now. It's that, you know, there's ebbs and flows of a season. And if you're going to get a lot of ups, you're going to get some downs too. And, they're missing right now 45%. Essentially, almost half of their home run output this season in Harper, Schwarber, and Realmuto, and that's going to make for not only challenging offense but also a not so pretty one.
Well, the offense, I think, over the weekend in this four game series was hopefully as bad as we're going to see it for a while. Even with a lineup that's still going to have a bunch of reserves for a little bit, this was particularly bad. And I think if there was any other team besides Miami on the other side of the field this weekend, the Phillies dropped 3 of 4 pretty comfortably. I don't know if anybody was hitting Chris Sanchez the way he was throwing, but you don't really commit 5 errors in a game and expect to win. That's not really winning baseball. Look, it's not ideal timing to not have two of your best hitters, including your very best hitter, for some really important games, some really high profile games. But the context, as always, we love context here on the show, is important because what can you really draw from these series? What will you really be able to take away if the Phillies drop 2 of 3 or get swept in Atlanta, or they drop 2 of 3 to the Dodgers, who are without a couple players of their own? There's not a lot of inference to take from this. And especially with the Phillies keeping up with this lead that they have, you know, coming back to win yesterday when the Braves, thank you, Bailey Falter, lost to the Pirates to keep this division lead at 8 games.
Oh, that was Bailey Falter.
That was Bailey Falter doing us a solid. They have this cushion still. They've had this cushion for months. They have had this wiggle room to play with. And this is where you could probably expect them to lose some of that. If they come out on the other side in these 9 games, you know, focusing on the Cubs, Braves, and Dodgers specifically to get us to next weekend, if they come in these 9 games and they say they go 3-6, 2-7, one of the worst cases.
Wow, you're especially bleak here.
Well, I mean, let's say they do, right?
They're catching the Cubs. The Cubs are an absolute disaster right now.
The Cubs
aren't. The Cubs are a mess.
The Cubs are having
trouble.
And
also, I think at least one, if not both, Schwarber and Harper will be active for that Dodgers series.
That's true. That's amazing news because you look at leg injuries and my immediate reaction every time, just to finish that point, if they go 2-7 and the Braves win every single game, they still have a division lead at the end of it. Like that's the kind of thing we're talking about here. The worst case scenario almost is the Phillies are still leading the division at the end of this gauntlet stretch. Anyway, the fact that these guys suffered leg injuries so close together, you never know how severe these things are going to be, right? We have all these examples now in this very season where Trey Turner walks off under his own power, looks, you know, basically normal after scoring against the Giants and has to miss a month. You look at Harper pull at the back of his, you know, hamstring running down the line. He's, you know, he's hobbling a little bit. He walks off under his own power, but it's more dramatic and it's more, you know, visceral almost. And he might only miss 2 weeks. It's always so dicey and it always makes me so nervous to see these injuries just kind of pop up because you just never know how long you're going to be without these guys. And when you see the offense without these guys in the lineup and the way they performed the last couple of days, not great. I know they scored 7 runs yesterday, but that was a clear exception to the rule. Thank you, Miami. You don't want those guys to miss a lot of time if you can help it. And thankfully it doesn't look like they will.
Yeah, I have a couple thoughts. I mean, one is, first of all, like, I'll start with this, Paul. I mean, like, how different is your mood from the fifth inning yesterday to when the game ended? Like, was it drastically different that they won that game?
No. I mean, it is a big help, obviously, but the Braves had already lost. And if the Phillies had dropped that, it would have been okay. But they end up picking up a game. It feels like a bonus. It wasn't a huge shift for me.
Yeah, and I just thought it was interesting, like, a lot of, like, the narrative surrounding the game, and then, like, I know Rob Thompson was asked about after the game, he said, you know, it was a game that they needed, you know, a big one, and I think I appreciate Rob kind of almost trying to placate, you know, angry people, I guess, but I mean, it's like, you know, there's a lot of talk about how you're going to score runs, and yeah, no doubt, I mean, like, I think those guys, you know, the B lineup, like you said, they need to have a little bit of confidence that they can come back in a game, that they can overcome, you know, horrid play in the field, 5 errors. But the idea of, like, you know, a late June game, you know, being labeled almost as like a must win or a needed win, I just, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like we're missing, you know, we're missing the bigger picture here. And, you know, I think, like, fandom, I totally understand, like, you're going to go up and down. Like, the team that I still care a lot about really is the Sixers. And, you know, I experienced that during the season, but, you know, you take the good with the bad. And I think what's been confusing to me is that the national perception of the Phillies, and I'm not talking about media wise, I am talking about within the industry from other front offices, from other coaches, from other players, is that, and I'm telling you, I've heard this from numerous people, and it's come from players, coaches, front office people from other teams that have come through or either just watching the Phillies and reach out and say that the Phillies are the most formidable team in baseball, period. And that most of these people believe it's not particularly close, and that is because of the top 4 starters in rotation and the back of the bullpen. And with that context, like, of course, you're going to get upset, you know, when you see 9 bad innings, and you're going to get upset if they split a series against the Marlins, a team that they obviously should be beating. But I don't know. I just feel like the way that, you know, the post-game show with all the shouting and WIP and social media, I feel like people's brains are broken right now. I mean, like, this is this was going to be a challenging stretch for them. It's not going to be pretty. You see them trying to take a few more chances on the bases. You see them maybe laying down a few more bunts. Marchand had a good bunt in Sunday's game. I just remember the bigger picture here, and that is that, you know, even if they get through this week with the Braves and now their lead is 5 games instead of 8. Is it 8 right now, right?
It is 8, yes.
They have 8, which is the largest divisional lead in baseball right now, by the way. I just, you know, I feel like the context is so important here. And I'll say, with regards to Harper and Schwarber, I was reporting on it all day. What was that? Friday?
Friday.
And what I had heard in the afternoon or early afternoon was that late morning was that, you know, both were likely going on the IL, but that both had really pushed back against that idea. And it wasn't them trying to, you know, I'm sure it was them probably with some misplaced optimism, but it was also more about both Harper and Schwarber. And I'm told this is what team sources said, was that, you know, they wanted to be available for that Braves series. And by going on the IL last Friday, that eliminated them from, you know, being available in that Braves series. I think both guys thought they could be back in like a week's time, and that would have required them to play short for a week. And I think obviously they took the right route here. And that is, you know, look, even if it's just 10 days, and maybe it'll just be 10 days for Schwarber, maybe it'll be a little more for Harper, although I don't know, they both could be back in 10 days. You know, just get it right. We're not going to play short, you know, let's just look at the bigger picture here. And, you know, I think that's the best course for them to take. It might be frustrating, obviously, in the short term to watch them, but I don't know. I feel like I'm have misplaced confusion here, but I don't know. Like, yeah, of course it's frustrating when they don't win, you know, if you're watching them and living and dying with every day, but they're in a position now where they don't have to live and die with every day. And it's a pretty good place to be.
They don't, right? It's a baseball specific thing where you can't use, certainly not in every individual game, but sometimes even entire series, as accurate measuring sticks of where a team is right now, right? You look at a 4-game series at home against Miami with your 4 normal starting pitcher spots going in all 4 games, and you split 2.
You should win 3 out of 4. Yeah.
You think like, yeah, if the teams are at full strength and the teams are playing as, you know, folks would be expecting them to on the whole, if they're representing their aggregates in every single game as a microcosm, which again, not how baseball works, but if they were doing that, then yes, you would expect the Phillies to win that series. Could they have? Yeah, maybe. Maybe they could.
I mean, they had leads in all 4 games. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, and we saw rare bullpen blowups, and you're going to laugh at this. I know you're going to laugh at this. I actually think and maybe you won't, but the Marlins are like a sneaky bad matchup for the Phillies. And it's because of a very funny thing, is that the Marlins are chasing right now at a higher rate than like any team has ever chased. I think Mike Bauman wrote about it at Fangraphs, or somebody wrote about it at Fangraphs before the series started. Uh-huh. And I immediately thought like, oh, this is kind of like a bad matchup for the Phillies right now, because why? The Phillies starters are in the zone a lot.
They don't walk anybody. Yeah.
They don't walk anybody. They don't throw a lot of strike to ball pitches, except for Sanchez, who does. And Sanchez like ate him up. And that changeup against a very free swinging Marlins team is like, you know, the perfect weapon to have. But everybody else in the staff, the starting staff, they're kind of in the zone. And the Marlins do jump and swing at pitches, a lot of pitches. And if it's in the zone, they are probably going to make contact. Hmm. And so this was like kind of a sneaky, the Marlins are a sneaky bad matchup for the Phillies staff. Does that make any sense?
When you put it that way, I mean, I could see it. If I squint, I can see it. It's kind of silly, but it makes sense. It played out that way, certainly. The thing that I think is really going to get people, and what probably I think worked folks up into a bit of a froth, a bit of a lather, is the way in which these games unfolded from an offensive side.
Yes.
Because, yes, from the Philly side, the Marlins also just the stuff with 2 outs, I'm not even going to look up the exact numbers anymore because it's ridiculous. They had so many hits. They scored so many of their runs with 2 outs. It was borderline offensive to me as a fan watching these games. But
yeah, I mean, what was their risk for the weekend? I mean,
That's
what's frustrating, right? Is that you see them, the puck guys on. Yeah. Yeah.
It's the worst. And the thing I need to talk myself down from all of that is exactly what I led into this with. It is not representative of what this lineup is right now. You only have a few guys who you can reasonably expect to put together consistently good at bats.
It's a pretty rough lineup.
You know, it's not great. It's really not right now. And that's just reality. That's just what you have to deal with for the next week and a half. And we were spoiled the first couple months of the year when guys had to miss a little bit of time or got days off piecemeal. And you had, you know, you had some Edmundo Sosa heroics while Turner was out, of course. In the immediate aftermath of JT going down, Marchand comes up and, you know, hits a home run at Baltimore, and he's been playing well. I think he's been playing well. He had an error on Sunday. Who didn't?
Catcher's interference, right?
Yeah. But when you have half of your lineup, sometimes more, filled with these guys for a consistent basis, you're probably not going to get that kind of performance, right? It's easier to look at the guys playing hero ball when they do it as a complement to the steady presence of more of the guys you expect to be in there every single day, if that makes sense.
Yeah, or if they only have to play hero ball for a week or 2 weeks or three weeks, and now we're seeing some of these guys, Sosa in particular. I mean, Sosa has really fallen off, and we've talked about it. I mean, like, great player for what he is, and gave them an incredible, you know, 4 to 6 weeks of production.
Absolutely.
But, you know, just kind of is what he is. And now even, you know, Cody Clemens has come back and, you know, has been just okay. And, you know, yeah, I mean, Whit Merrifield continues to be a problem. And I think, you know, I think time is starting to run out on him. I do, but
well, that makes sense. Like, how long did Josh Harrison make it last year?
Yeah, he made it to the trade deadline last year.
Yeah. And, you know,
DD made it to the trade deadline 2 years ago, and Josh Harrison made it to the trade deadline last year. You know, maybe a similar thing with Merrifield this year, but, you know, they will face some roster decisions, you know, whenever Harper and Schwarber are ready. I do think JT is traveling with them this week. Okay. Harper and Schwarber are traveling with them too. JT, though, almost certainly will not be active until whatever that day is, the first day after the break in Pittsburgh, the 19th.
Okay.
I think JT Real Muto will be active on the 19th. So they have some time with that, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, they're going to face some roster decisions here, but you're right. I mean, like, that's, I mean, there's the next man up thing, you know, something they've talked about a lot, and it is really a great mentality to have, and they have been able to plug guys in, but there is a limit to how that can work.
Yeah, it's a little tough when next man up has to happen 5 consecutive times in your lineup each game. It is. I mean,
yeah,
it is.
No, it is, and that's essentially what's happening. Yeah.
But that's okay. If the alternative is missing guys for 2 months, you know, if this had been a grade 2 hamstring strain for Harper.
I mean, one looked bad.
Yeah.
I think they all believe that they were rather lucky. I think
the toughest part for me in trying to talk to folks who are maybe confused about the way the midsummer is playing out, either with pitcher usage or what have you, like the machinations of the teeth of a baseball season, is that what the Phillies are doing right now, and you started saying this a couple weeks ago, what the Phillies are doing right now is in service of October. The way they are playing their guys, the way they are using their pitchers, everything is part of a plan that they are putting together for making sure as many of these guys as they can possibly help get there are healthy for October. That includes this past weekend, too. The bullpen had been used a little bit more lately, you know, with Walker having short starts, with Turnbull having to leave his, you know, there'd been a little bit of jostling. You have to save Michael Mercado because now he's going to go into the rotation. And I think Nola and Wheeler were pushed farther than they probably would have been otherwise.
Yeah.
In their
starts. And because they're going to get not 2 extra days. They're going to get an extra day because they're off today. Wheeler gets an extra day. Yeah. Wheeler went to 115, which is a lot.
That is a lot, but I don't know if they do that if they're not trying to swing the pendulum back the other way and, you know, take a moment to try and save the relievers a little bit. They still got used. Yeah. The bullpen still got used this weekend.
I mean, I thought it was interesting to see how he used his bullpen Sunday. Mm. You know, he had Greg Soto in the 8th, and, you know, Soto's been sneaky good of late. And they gave him a pretty high leverage spot there. And it's not that they didn't have other guys. I mean, they had, you know, Strom had pitched 3 out of 4. So he's, you know, in Rob Thompson's usage, he's kind of like a yellow to red, you know, for that day, probably not available, but could be available. But they went with, Soto there, and they didn't use Alvarado. Alvarado only pitched twice in the previous 5 days. But I thought it was interesting. They went to Soto and showed him a little love, and he paid them back with a really nice inning.
top of the order. Yeah. Strikeout, lineout, strikeout. And we're going to need more of that, right? If this is going to be, if this is going to be the state of things until the All-Star break, you know, okay. Yeah. Next man up. And a lot of these guys are the next man up right now, but you gotta pick your teammates up. Turner did that. You know, big players make big plays. Turner had the big go ahead hit in the seventh inning.
Castellanos had a decent game.
Castellanos had a good game at the plate. The defense.
Castellanos is finally back. Castellanos is now at a 91 OPS plus.
There he is, 675 on the year. Yeah,
wow. That's crazy. That 675 is eight, is 9% worse than league average right now. My
offense
God.
Is so brutal. I mean, yeah, Bryson Stott, 695. That's a 99 OPS plus.
Yeah, and if we want to talk about guys who need to step up, I mean, obviously Castellanos is a very easy answer, and you know, I think he can change the narrative of the season, maybe just in this 1 week here, this upcoming week. You know, if Nick Castellanos has a big week at Wrigley and Truist, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you're it's easier to forget, you know, the first few months. And you don't completely forget it, but it's easier to forget. But I start to look at other guys, Paul, and I think, you know, not to like slam on these two guys, but I think both Stott and Marsh, you know, really need to just be a little better. And, you know, we were expecting the three younger guys to, you know, keep taking steps forward. It doesn't have to be a huge step forward, but you want to keep seeing little improvement from year to year. Yeah. And obviously with Alec Bohm, you know, we've seen huge gains, you know, probably going to be starting third base for the National League All-Star team. Has had a tremendous year for them. Just another home run on Sunday. Mm-hmm. You know, but both Marsh and Stott, just very uneven seasons. You know, and I'm not trying to pick on Marsh because, you know, Marsh has got a 121 OPS plus right now, which is, again, 21% better than league average. But a lot of that is from April. And a lot of the conversation about Marsh right now is the same conversation we were having two summers ago and last summer. He just doesn't seem like a guy who can face left-handed pitchers. And they let him face a lefty in the middle of the game yesterday. Did not come through with runners on base. You know, still got hits later in the game because they kept him in, and is also playing, you know, he's playing a tremendous left field.
Yes.
Whenever he plays left field, a lot of his value right now is from his defensive work in left field. He's been terrific. But there just hasn't been a consistent power stroke, even against righties, and there hasn't been consistent production against lefties. And I know there's some people would say, well, he hasn't gotten the consistent chances, and he hasn't. But I don't know. I mean, like, and with Stott, I just see a guy who's caught in between different approaches, right? I mean, he went into the season saying that, you know, he didn't want to get to two strikes as much as he had in the past, even though he can hit with two strikes, you know, tied with the major league lead last year with hits with two strikes.
It wasn't it like 90 something. It was crazy.
He was like tied with Bobby Witt Jr. I think it was like 88 or 89 hits with two strikes last year, which is great if you can do it, but that's hard to do. And, and he felt that he was being too passive early in counts, that he was letting too many pitches that he could hit, you know, just go by for strikes. And I see him trying at times to be more aggressive early in the count, but I also see him, I just feel like I see him questioning that almost like mid at bat when he's like, when he takes a swing at a pitch and he fouls it off or he rolls over on it early in the count, he's like, well, why did I do that? And he just seems caught right now between those two approaches, and there's been very little power in his swing. You know, a lot of balls hit to left field in the air. You know, they're just kind of like dying, you know, 210 feet away from home plate. So, you know, this is not on them, I'm not saying, but I mean, when you down a few guys, like, you want to see those guys take some steps forward. And I think Stott and Marsh both have some work to do.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/westwoodone.
It would be harsh to say they've taken steps backwards. Yeah,
I'm not saying that. I think it's been stagnant. Yeah. Stott, I think, has taken a step backward. Although, again, he's getting on base. I mean, right now, like, he has a better on base percentage than he did last year. You know, right. I mean, his batting average is 40 points lower, but his on base is 7 points higher right now.
Right. And that comes back to the point you started to make about different approaches. It is almost like a different player at the plate, Bryson Stott, this year.
It is.
It's strange. I was really into the survivor mentality that he had last year with the fact
that's such a hard way to live.
I can understand wanting to work out of that and trying to, you know, either find a better pitch to hit earlier in a count or whatever, just try and avoid that a little bit. I thought that was a unique skill that maybe he could, you know, blend in with a little bit more of that aggressive approach. And I do think he's a little bit caught in between. The results at least say that he's caught in between. And who knows what the answer is. You know, he'll work with Kevin Long, he'll work with himself, they'll figure it out. I don't think he is by any means somebody who is about to slip into, you know, full on, you know, do we need to worry about an offensive bust kind of category? like, we're not going to sound any
still alarms. Playing a strong second base.
Yeah.
I think. I mean,
yeah. This guy who still carries a ton of value. Don't get us wrong. The Marsh thing, I think, is both a current and a future area of, I'll call it, concern. I'm not super worried about it because he plays the long side of a platoon pretty well.
Correct.
You do need to address that other half.
And this is, to me, the biggest trade. Yeah. And it's not, again, this is not, you know, you're not probably, you know, there may not be any impact bats out there, and that's okay. You are looking for a very specific type of upgrade, and that is an outfielder who can hit left-handed pitching.
Yeah.
A corner outfielder.
Yeah.
And that is something that you should be able to find.
I would think so, even in this environment. And we'll take a closer look at that as we get closer to the end of July and as things start to crystallize a little bit more. The good news, I guess, then, from a buyer's perspective, as far as the Phillies are concerned, is that there's been a little bit more separation in terms of what teams you could reasonably expect to look toward selling. You know, for weeks we've been looking, especially in the National League, at just
the Mets back.
Total mess. You know what? I actually will give the Mets, they are having some fun right now between this grimace first pitch thing and Jose Iglesias trying to be a pop superstar. Like, okay, good, man. Have some fun with it. Sure, fine. You know, 40 and 41, two games back of the last wild card spot. We're not looking at the complete and total, you know, pile up on the interstate that we were looking at before. There's still only five games that separate a bunch of teams, but things are starting to pull apart a little bit. The Cardinals have fully righted their ship. They're playing much better. The Mets have obviously made things interesting. And then you still don't know what to make of some of these other teams. I expect the Nats to still, you know, break up their team a little bit more. Yeah, sell a they're couple calling guys.
James Wood is playing. He's getting called up. He's going to play tonight.
The
Cubs have the third worst record in the National League right now.
The Cubs are the surprise potential seller of this whole thing.
Right. What's your feelings on Cody Bellinger?
Yeah. I think of Cody Bellinger as one of the rare okay left-handed fits as far as this team is concerned, because he can actually hang with left-handed pitching.
He's not been great.
You know, this year's small sample and obviously disproportionate to the amount he's faced righties. But in his 88 plate appearances against lefties this year, 14 strikeouts to one walk, which is, you know, something to keep an eye on. But he is hitting .337 with a .465 slug. He's slugging better against lefties than against righties. Again, sample sizes come into play there. He plays a good outfield.
He's a tough guy to trade for because he's got these two player options. And it's like, if you're trading for him, are you trading a package commensurate with a 2-month rental? Or are you trading for a guy who's going to be under contract with you for $27.5 million next year. Like I don't know how you would navigate that trade. Maybe there's got to be some kind of, I don't know. That's a difficult one.
Yeah. In my opinion. Maybe there's a kicker or some other kind of thing in there. That's probably the bigger holdup. And admittedly, I had forgotten about the two options there.
He's got two player options.
Yeah, yes. He does. But that's the sort of thing you need to look at now, and we'll probably want to look at more, is as we get into July and as things progress a little bit more, are there going to be other versions of the Cubs, maybe teams that fall out of it a little bit more? When do you strike? You know, as everybody is so packed together, when do you try and make that move? And does it mean that you pay up a little bit more in terms of prospect capital? I don't know. Those are the waters that you have to navigate when things are so tightly packed here. I think of it as a good side effect of the current system. I think this is a good thing. I wish more teams would try and buy and try and compete. I don't think they will. I still think there's going to be a tendency for some of these teams to be like, no, we set out at the beginning of the year that this is not going to be our year. Or if they were a 50-50 team, say like the Reds, and have fallen back a little bit, that they're probably not going to try and, you know, force their hand here. They'll try and look ahead to 2025. I do think
should the Phillies try to make Jonathan India an outfielder?
Let's see. Now we get into the interesting stuff. Do you try and make John India an outfielder? Do you try and see if Seiya Suzuki can learn left field on the fly? Like,
get ready to learn Philadelphia, buddy.
You know, like,
I do think, I don't think the Astros are going to be selling. And I know that a lot of people were kind of fixated on that for, for like a week or 2 weeks, because they were
the best record Twitter in the AL in June, about
Kyle Tucker. And, yes, they, probably going to win that division.
Over 500
they're
now.
They're 3.5 back now of the Mariners in that division. And, I don't think Kyle Tucker's getting traded.
No, it would be a shock. I think it was a shock even when they
It's not even, it's not even, on the table. It's not.
They're pesky. All right, switching gears back to the rotation for just a second. If we can think about the week and a half ahead from a slightly different perspective. The Phillies are down Taijuan Walker. He's recovering from the blister on his index finger on his pitching hand.
They're also trying to do some different stuff with him too, and I'll give them credit. They are trying to do a velocity program with him while he's down. Some more weighted ball stuff, the kind of stuff that, you know, a veteran guy might not necessarily has been exposed to a lot because he's a certain age, and some of the stuff, you know, maybe wasn't in vogue when he was developing or when he was a younger player. So they're going to try a few things here. They're using this as a break to just experiment.
That's kind of cool. I don't think we can say the same for Spencer Turnbull, who... strained his lat, I believe it was, behind his throwing shoulder.
The muscle in the back, behind his shoulder.
So that has left 8 weeks. Yeah. That has left the Phillies with scant few options for who to fill in at the fifth spot in the rotation. Next man up, drum roll please, Michael Mercado, who just made his major league debut, pitched a clean inning with a strikeout. He had been doing some starting in Lehigh Valley, hadn't been going so deep into games, and I think there's a little bit of concern about him being able to stay in the strike zone for a while in a start, but things being as they are, he's the guy. He's going to be the one to fill in. Not Mick Abel, not Griff McGarry, not maybe five or six other names you could think up first for being the seventh man in the rotation. No, it's Michael Mercado.
I mean, crazy they got to July using only six starters.
It has, again, another stretch of good luck. I hope it keeps up. I really do.
Yeah.
Mercado picked up from the Tampa Bay Rays in the early parts of last offseason for a minor leaguer named Adam Leverett, who still has yet to make his own major league debut. Michael Mercado is in the majors with the Phillies. He is going to make the start in the fifth spot in the rotation.
I'm going through my notes because I wrote down a few things talking to some people about him last week.
Yeah, Matt, what can you tell us about Michael Mercado other than what we've seen so far just in a short one-inning burst?
Was a starter in the Rays system, you know, was then transitioned to reliever last year while with the Rays still. And, you know, saw some upticks and stuff, you know, strikeout rate. He had one of the best strikeout rates in the minors last year. Tall guy, like he is huge, and what he did in the offseason after the Phillies trade for him is he did add some weight. He added some strength. They went through some strength training with him. And there were people, I know in the spring, there was a lot of division about, what is this guy? Is this guy a starter or is this guy a reliever? Because he looks like a starter. He's got a starter's build. He's got starter's mechanics. He has possibly a starter's arsenal. And so the people who wanted him to be a starter won in the organization. And they essentially did a slow build up with him. And he started in the bullpen at Lehigh Valley and then moved into the rotation. Was actually going to go back to the bullpen sometime this month because they're kind of wanted to keep him alive for major league innings because he has thrown a lot so far. Hmm. But he's added a cutter and a splitter basically this year. The splitter is more of like a show me thing. You know, he's used it against righties and lefties. He did not throw a splitter in his only appearance in the majors. He threw a couple cutters that were not good. I think he threw two cutters in the one inning he threw against the Tigers. But, you know, fastball, curveball, we saw a lot of curveballs in the relief inning. Fastball, curveball, cutter, slider, you know, can get it up to 94, 95 as a starter. You know, maybe touch 96 as a reliever is probably more like 97, 98. Strikes are a problem. You know, I mean, he was moved to the bullpen by the Rays because he did not throw enough strikes. And I think most evaluators see him as a reliever in the majors. But I do think there were some changes to the body and changes to the arsenal that make him intriguing enough to try to see what it is as a starter. He's going to get Tuesday's game against the Cubs, which means that he's going to get Sunday against the Braves. That's a hell of a
Yeehaw.
Assignment. Which means then he'll get another start before the break, and that would be against the A's, which is a little bit of an easier assignment.
A little better, yeah.
So he gets three starts here basically before the break. Would not be surprised if we saw Taiwan Walker in that fifth game or fourth game out of the break. I guess that would be in Minnesota at that time. So Mercado's got a shot here, and I think the expectations are pretty measured. You know, but kudos to them. You know, it was a small trade in the offseason, and they thought he was a reliever. I remember asking Dave Dombrowski at the winter meetings soon after they made the trade, like, is he a reliever or star? And Dave's like, he's a reliever. We see him as a reliever. And I think that was the plan, but I think they were impressed by some of the changes and some of the stuff he did in the offseason to make him put his body in better shape. So, you know, Colby Allard was a guy they thought they'd be depth, and they thought McAble was going to be depth, and they thought Tyler Phillips could be depth. But Mercado, you know, really leapfrogged all those guys, and credit to him.
You know, when you're describing the repertoire there and you list the four pitches and the potential fifth, you know, the arm side offering with the splitter, like hopefully something can happen with that, because the top four things there were all, you know, glove side, you know, no real lefty weapon there, just on description, which could be a problem. Again, real high level. You hear about the body, you know, listed at 6'4", 205, but I guess that was coming in, and, you know, maybe there's been a little bit more muscle there on it. That's a good frame. If you have four pitches, that's good. You need to have multiple offerings to go multiple times through a lineup. I'm always a little bit concerned about, you know, wildness guys. I feel like they're the ones whose starts can unravel the quickest, the fastest, catch you the most by surprise that they go, because when they go, they go. But clearly he's done enough to really raise his profile, not just within this organization, but potentially elsewhere. I don't know how long Michael Mercado is for this roster, but while he's here, I'll be very interested to see what he can do. You know, we saw Matt Strom last year jump right in, more of a veteran, obviously, but jump right into the rotation, fill in more than admirably, shift back into a bullpen role and make it work. I don't know what Michael Mercado is going to look like during this start. Probably like 70 pitches, 75 pitches. Maybe they'll try and get out of him.
Maybe.
Hope you clear four or five innings there.
And to your point about lefties, like in the minors, he walked. Don't know. I'm looking at this wrong. But yeah, he had lefties had a 341 on base against him in the minors this year.
Yeah, see, that's not quite.
And he's going to face quite a few lefties in the Cubs lineup. He'll face Bush and Bellinger and Happ is a switch hitter, I think. And who's the prospect outfielder with the long name?
Crow Armstrong.
He's a lefty. Yeah. Yes. So it's going to be a good test. And, you know, I think makeup wise, like, I think they've been really impressed with, he's been very coachable. He's been open to different ideas. you know, is one of the best golfers in the clubhouse. He was has one of the lower handicaps of anyone in the clubhouse, and that was I think a lot of guys were impressed by that in spring training. So, yeah.
But can he play Paco ball?
I don't know. God, yeah. That feels like 2 years ago.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think everybody knows what the score is. I think everybody is still on board with the plan. The score is the Phillies are leading the division by 8 games.
Right.
You know, like, I would love to see the Phillies make some kind of statement against these teams over this next week and change. I would love to see them pull.
It would be a hell of a statement again if they take 2 out of 3 from the Braves with this zombie roster.
Yes, it would, but that is not essential. I think we're still learning to be in the driver's seat, to still be like, it's okay to drop a game here and there. Because it is. The margin is not razor thin right
now. I don't know that anyone's ever going to feel that way in this market, but that's fine.
You know, it's true. It's true. I do sometimes feel like...
Yeah, the matchups look like Nola Fried, Suarez, Schwellenbach. Am I saying that right?
Spencer Schwellenbach, yeah.
And then Mercado against Lopez.
Sure. Okay.
Sure.
Look, it's an opportunity to steal a game or two. You know,
I hate to tell you this. There are 2 of those games are on national TV. Friday is an Apple game and Saturday is a Fox national game.
Great, of course. My expectations are low, not out of pessimism, not out of negadelphianism, really. I'm just trying to be as objective as I can be about this. The Phillies usually have a tough time playing in Atlanta in the regular season. They're missing key guys. The rotation has an entire spot that is dedicated to an unknown for the time being. It might not go well.
Yeah, and that's okay. Same thing about the Braves. The Braves are now running an outfield of Forrest Wall and Jared Kelnick in center field and Ramon Laureano in right field. That's a hell of a thing.
See, Matt, my experience from the Philadelphia side of this is that each of those 3 guys will now homer in this series, probably in the 8th inning to either tie the game or give them the lead, because that's just the way the Braves operate. That is the Negadelphian coming out, okay? Specifically getting into the weeds and details. Look, I'm okay if they lose that series. I will be annoyed if they get swept, but I'll also be like, well, okay, that uses up some of their cushion, fine.
Well, but I mean, that's one of those series where you start to do the math and like you got to win at 1, right?
Yeah,
I mean, because exactly. if you go two and three in that series, you lose only 1 game in the standings.
Yeah.
If you lose all 3, you lose 3 games in the standings. I mean, that's you know, winning at least one of those games, you know, if we're not talking about importance there. I mean, that winning one of those games would be rather important. If you go in there and get swept, you've made things a lot harder on yourself.
Right now, it's about wasting time, and that would waste Atlanta's time to win a game in that series because you burn 3 games to make up 1 game of ground. That is a ratio the Phillies should be playing for. It's why Sunday was a nice little bonus that they could, you know, move from 7 to 8 games up, increase that padding a little bit, almost miraculously, a little bit of a bonus. And now you have that wiggle room to play with. And we'll see what things look like when they actually go into the weekend, when Friday actually starts, because they do still have to play 3 in Chicago first. And we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. I wish both teams were closer to full strength. There's so much star power missing from this series.
I mean, it's going to be kind of funny with zombie, both teams with zombie rosters.
It's just, man, it's tough. But that's the reality. Both teams got to play through it. Both teams got to either hold their ground or make up their ground. And the Phillies are in the position where, like you said, 1 single win can do a lot to waste Atlanta's time. We just need to keep wasting Atlanta's time. Okay. I think that'll just about do it for this week. Matt, as we look ahead to this road trip where you will be present, excellent. What should we look for you on the pages of The Athletic?
I have no idea, but I'm excited to cover, you know, this weekend, like, you know, probably more game centric kind of coverage, you know, the Braves games, just cause I think there'd be, you know, there's a little more importance, a little more attention on the actual games themselves. So
yeah,
excited for the weekend. We'll see what this week in Chicago brings. Excited to spend July 4th in Chicago.
It's quickly turning into one of my favorite things to ask you for a tease and then just be like, oh,
sometimes I don't freaking know.
Like,
I have some ideas. I mean, I have some ideas. I just don't want to, you know.
I know.
Sometimes I don't want to tip my hand, but that's okay. I know.
No, you shouldn't. You shouldn't.
I'm very self-important.
You take pride in your work. All right. That's it. It's been an interesting week. I know people were frustrated by Miami. Whatever. Things are still good. Just grin and bear it this week, okay? Everybody try and keep your heads up. It could be ugly, but maybe
a good week for them is 3-4. They play 6 games. 3-3. A good week for them is 3-3. I'm sorry.
Yep, absolutely.
And that would mean, you know, you put in the 4 against the Marlins, and that means you go, you know, 5-5 over a 10-game stretch, mm-hmm. which I think.
With, again, like half a zombie team. That's fine by me. But you got to do it. Next man up all the time. Let's go. And we'll try and enjoy as much as possible. Okay, so that is the end of this vamp. That is the end of this week's episode. Thank you all for hanging with us. Thank you, as always, for listening. Shout out to our folks watching over on Twitch. And thank you, as always, to the Believe Network for helping us get the word out. For Matt, I am Paul. We'll catch you next week.